The Ten Commandments are one of the most well-known sections of Scripture and form a constitution of sorts for the nation of Israel, describing the kind of people they are to be in relationship with the Lord. But they beg the question, can the people of Israel live up to these ideals? Can we? Welcome to the GBC Sermon Podcast, a weekly message from Guymer Baptist Church in Sydney, Australia. I'm Jodine Watling, Associate Pastor at GBC, and I pray that you hear the invitation of the Holy Spirit as you listen to this message. As a community of faith, we want to help people hear and respond to the invitation of God to join in His mission to renew everything in Jesus. This week, as we come to the Ten Commandments, Senior Pastor Mark Rader explores this well-known text in a first-person narrative, in which he speaks from the perspective of a character in the text, in this case, Moses.
It was a long trip to the summit, but to tell you the truth, I didn't pay too much attention to the ascent. I was far too preoccupied with what we had just experienced, and to tell you the truth, really quite worried about how the people had responded. We'd arrived at the foot of Mount Sinai 3 months to the day after we left Egypt, just as the Lord had promised us. And as we camped at the foot of the mountain, the Lord called to me and told me to speak some remarkable words to the people gathered there. These were the words He told me to say. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I have carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And now, if you will fully obey me and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be for me a treasured possession. Though the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This was unlike anything that the Lord had ever delivered to me before. These were not instructions for what we were to do, like with the Passover, nor was this a declaration of intent, what the Lord intended to do in a particular situation. This was an invitation from the Lord to the people of Israel to enter into a relationship with Him, a special, unique covenant relationship where the Lord would be our God and we would be His people. This was an extraordinary invitation. And as if that wasn't remarkable enough, once the people had accepted this invitation, the Lord told us to prepare ourselves, for He would come down to the mountain and we would hear His voice. And so we prepared. For 3 days, we consecrated ourselves and waited, and on the third day, I led the children of Israel to the foot of the mountain to meet their God. And it was overwhelming. And maybe it was the overwhelming nature of what they experienced that led to the response of the people. I mean, I at least have had some experiences of close encounters with the Lord. I had stood on this very mountain, barefoot, on holy ground, as the angel of the Lord had called me and sent me to Egypt. On numerous occasions, the Lord had spoken to me, and I had conveyed those words to Aaron, my brother, or to Pharaoh, or to the Israelites themselves. And while I wouldn't say that I was familiar with the ways of the Lord, for His ways are not like my ways, and His thoughts are higher than my thoughts, His voice was not unfamiliar to me. But for the people, they had never experienced anything like this before. I mean, they had seen the mighty acts of power. They had seen the plagues unleashed on the people of Egypt, but they had never seen the hand that performed those deeds. And so what happened for them at the foot of the mountain was like seeing the wind. For as we stood there, the summit was covered in dense cloud. The mountain began to shake and began to smoke like a furnace. There was flashes of lightning and rumblings and peals of thunder, and over it all, a sound like rushing waters or a trumpet that grew louder and louder and louder. And out of the storm, the Lord spoke to us. And not to us collectively, as if the Lord were speaking and we were just listening in. No, the Lord spoke to each of us individually. To every woman who stood at the foot of that mountain, the Lord spoke directly to her. To every man who was assembled before the Lord spoke directly to him. To every girl, to every boy, to every slave, to every foreigner who had cast their lot in with the Lord and with his people, the Lord spoke directly to them, inviting them into a relationship with him, inviting them to respond personally to what he was inviting them into. It was remarkable. And their response to this once-in-a-lifetime, never-to-be-repeated, utterly unique invitation from God worried me. And it wasn't just their response, it was what they were responding to. What they responded to, the very words of God. For hear the words of the Lord. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And in one simple sentence, our entire story with God was included. I mean, that simple line, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, we were reminded of all that the Lord had done for us. We were reminded of his protection against the Amalekites, of his provision of food and water in the wilderness. We were reminded of his mighty act of salvation as he buried the Egyptian army in the sea after we had crossed through on dry ground. We were reminded of his guidance in the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. We were reminded of the angel of death passing over our homes while the firstborn of all the Egyptian households died. We were reminded of the darkness that descended everywhere in Egypt except where we lived. We were reminded of locusts and of hail and of flies and of frogs and of blood. We were reminded of bricks without straw. We were reminded of the mourning mothers who had lost their infant sons thrown to the Nile. We were reminded of bitter and harsh labor and of crying out and of being heard. For our story with the Lord did not begin in Egypt. It began with a promise given to Abraham, a promise that called him from his land across the Euphrates River to the land of Canaan, a promise that said that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars, a promise that declared that those who blessed him would receive the very blessing of the Lord and that those who opposed him would be opposed by God himself, a promise that said through his descendants all nations on earth would be blessed. A promise that gave an old man and an old woman, barren and childless, a son. A promise that followed Jacob from Bethel to Haran and back again. The promise that went with Joseph, sent into slavery by his brothers, but ultimately sent by God, whose favor and wisdom brought Joseph to a position not only to save his family, but to bless all nations. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And with the whole story of our relationship with God before us, then he spoke these words. You shall have no other gods before me. And not you, but you and you. And you and all of you shall have no other gods before me. And you and you and you and all of you shall make no images nor bow down and worship them. And you and you and all of you shall not misrepresent my name. And you and you and you and all of you, you shall remember the Sabbath day. And you will keep it holy, and you will do no work upon it. And you, and you, and you, and all of you, honor your mother and your father. And all of you, do not kill. And all of you, do not steal. And all of you, do not commit adultery. And all of you, do not speak falsely. And all of you, do not covet anything that belongs to another. 10 words, 10 declarations of God's character. the one and only God, besides whom there could be no other gods. The one who is so great and all-powerful and utterly transcendent that no idol could ever constrain or contain him. A God who is so righteous and holy and merciful and just and compassionate that he is worthy of all honor in how he is represented in the world. The God who created all things in heaven and on earth and below, things seen and unseen, and rested on the seventh day. The Father in heaven, from whom every family on earth derives its name. The God who provides for all of his people. The God who provides life and breath to all who live, and in whose book our days are written. The God who ordained that a man should leave his mother and his father and be committed to his wife and become one flesh. The one who speaks truthfully. And the God whose generosity and liberality is known everywhere. He makes his sun to shine on the righteous and the wicked. His rain falls on the good and the bad. And you begin to see why I was so concerned about how the people responded. You see, this is not legislation. These are not commands and laws. There are no precedents. There are no consequences. There are no exceptions detailed within these. Instead, they are a statement of God's own character, and it calls forth a response of character. These are not 10 things about what we should do, but these are 10 things that we ought to be. It speaks to the matter of the heart. I mean, how in heaven's name are you to legislate against covetousness? At what point does admiration for someone, their skills or their position or their possessions, their home, their husband, their wife, when does admiration slip into envy, and how is that made evident in our lives? While speaking truthfully, I suppose, is easier to determine, are our hearts, the source of all our words, so committed to truthfulness that we will speak not only the easy truths but the hard ones? Are we so committed to honesty that we will not allow someone's wealth or status or power influence the truthfulness of our words? What about the greed that undermines so much of our theft? Not just the greed that causes me to seek to steal from you, but the greed in which more of us gather more things so that more people have less and are led with nothing except the possibility of theft. Is it enough for us to remain out of one another's marriage beds if our hearts are filled with lust? Is it enough not to kill someone if our hearts are filled with hatred and anger and rage? Can we honor our parents in a similar way when we are children or when we are adults or when they are old and frail? Is the Sabbath day and keeping it holy and resting just a matter of physical exertion? Is it only a matter of making sure that we don't do certain things and do others? Or is it instead a posture of the heart, of rest and contentment before the Lord? And do we represent the Lord's name properly in the world if all we are concerned with are the externals? If the only thing that interests us is the things that we do, and we are not interested in the things that we are, in our character and in our heart, have we fully represented the Lord in the world? And it is possible, is it not, for us to have no idols in our homes and yet have an idol in our heart that causes us to fail to trust the Lord, to look to our strength, the strength of others, to provide the good things in life. And now do you see why I was so concerned? Because the hearts of these people are not right. Just days after we had left Egypt, days after we had seen the mighty act of God, his grand salvation on the shores of the Red Sea, at the very first hint of hardship, this people grumbled and complained against the Lord. This people, their first reaction was to question the intention of the Lord, to question whether he actually cared or whether he was bringing us into the wilderness to kill us. This people wanted to return to Egypt and slavery rather than serve the Lord. And my fear was that their response came from those divided hearts. Hearts that were hardened, hearts that were stubborn, hearts that were not fully committed to the Lord. Because their response, after the Lord had spoken these words, was not awe and wonder. It was not worship. It was not to step closer to the Lord. No, it was a response of fear and withdrawal. Their words to me were these: "You speak to us, and we will listen. But do not let the Lord speak to us, or we will die." And I said, as I began my ascent, "Do not be afraid. The Lord has just come down to test you, that the fear of the Lord, the respect for the Lord might keep you from sinning." But as I've been climbing, I keep asking myself whether that will be enough. Will it be enough for this people to have heard the voice of God speaking directly to them? Will that be enough to change their heart? Will it be enough for this people to have seen the storm descend upon the mountain, to have heard the trumpet blast? Will it be enough to change their heart? Will it be enough for this people to recall the great acts of God's salvation, or to remember his promises and to see their fulfillment? Will that be enough to change their hearts? And the only conclusion that I can come to is that it will not. And I want to go down. I want to return to the people and say to them, you cannot enter into a relationship with the Lord. Your hearts are not right. They are hardened and they are stubborn and they are not set on following him. And you are about to enter into a relationship with the Lord. A relationship where he will demand all of your heart and you are not able to give it to him. And that will be a disaster. You are undeserving. You are unworthy of this invitation. The most that we can say as the people gathered here is that we have been the recipients of God's grace and his mercy and his faithfulness, swept along in his promises and his purposes. which is exactly the point, isn't it? We, me, and you, and you, and you, and all of you, have only ever been recipients of God's grace, swept up in his promises and purposes. When I think of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you do not have to look far to see evidence of hearts that were not wholly devoted to the Lord. Lying and deceit and failure to trust and murder and lust and rage and envy. It's all there. And yet the Lord made promises to them nonetheless. And our hearts are no less fully devoted to the Lord, and yet he has nonetheless invited you and you and you and all of you into that relationship. We have only ever been recipients of his grace. And the response that so concerned me of the people, their fear and withdrawal has ironically become my own. Fearful of a heart divided and withdrawing from the Lord because of our imperfection. And my fear and the people's fear has come from focusing on ourselves rather than the character of the Lord, who is always faithful and who is always gracious and whose purposes roll over top of us, sweeping us along. And perhaps the response that I need to bring to the Lord is not their response of fear and withdrawal, but their first response. When I first conveyed to them the words of the Lord, when I first extended to them the invitation to enter into a relationship with the Lord, their response was this: we will do everything the Lord has said. And maybe that intention, though spoken from a divided heart, maybe that intention, with the trustworthy character of God, maybe that might just work. And if God has been faithful to guide us and to protect us and to provide for our food and our drink, perhaps He will also provide us what we really need: a new heart. It's a long way to the summit, but as I go to meet the Lord, I am no longer filled with fear, but with trust. And I cannot wait to hear what the Lord will say to you, to you, and to you, to all of you, what He will say to each one of us. But I know this: we can trust His grace, His faithfulness, His promises, and His purposes. He will be our God, and we will be His people.
We have always only ever been recipients of the Lord's grace and faithfulness, swept up in His plans and purposes. If we focus only on externals, or only on our ability or inability to be faithful, we will draw from a relationship with the Lord in fear. His character, however, invites us to approach Him boldly and trust in His character, in His promise-keeping faithfulness. And how much more so for those of us who have placed our faith in Jesus. If this message has been helpful for you, share it with someone else this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you as you hear and respond to the invitation of God. You can find us on Facebook or visit our website at guymedbaptist.org.au. This series will also be broadcast on ACC TV later this year. You can follow New Horizons TV on Mondays at 10 p.m. or Thursdays at 8:30 a.m. and watch previous sermons on our website. May your eyes and ears be open and your heart be soft to the invitation of the Spirit to join in God's renewing work in Jesus.